scripture this morning is John chapter 10, verses 7 through 11. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came in before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." This is the living word of God for us today. You may be seated.
Good morning. Thank you, Brian, worship team. It's good to worship. It's good to sing songs about Jesus, especially. I'm grateful to be here with you this morning. I hope that you're grateful to be here as well. Let me just welcome you to fellowship. Hopefully you already have been a couple times, maybe on your way in. I know you were welcomed by Brian, our worship pastor here at Fellowship Franklin, and now let me welcome you as well. My name is Rob, one of two teaching pastors here at Fellowship, along with Lloyd Shadrach. We have two campuses here at Brentwood, and we're in the same series together. And while I'm here, Lloyd is at the Brentwood campus, and we alternate back and forth. So you'll hear typically myself and then Lloyd, and then go back and forth that way. We've been in John's gospel because we teach here expositionally. We'll pick a book of the Bible, and we'll go through it verse by verse, and we've been in the gospel of John now for a number of months. I think we started last fall, and we still have a ways to go in John chapter 10. Before we get into our text, though, let me just mention a couple other things announcement-wise very briefly. If you're new to Fellowship, I can't encourage you enough to get to know us. We would love to get to know you. The best way to do that is our Intro to Fellowship class, the first Sunday of every month and the second service. You can find more information at connectedfellowship.com. And then also for all of us, I just want to remind us part of our giving, or part of our worship, rather, is giving. We have an opportunity to open our hands and allow God to use the things that he's placed in them to his glory. That is such a joy and a privilege. And I hope that you are a part of that, both here at your church and also in other places as well, as we give generously. So you can get more information at that website, or you can text to that phone number and get more information that way. Now, I want to say something briefly about Memorial Day weekend. I know sometimes it gets a little confusing. What's the difference between Memorial Day weekend and Veterans Day? And we have these different things that we do, and of course, Independence Day. Well, veterans are we recognize and celebrate on Veterans Day anyone who served in our armed forces and our military. On Memorial Day, we recognize and appreciate those who have given their lives, the ultimate sacrifice in defense of our country or serving our country in some way. It's pretty personal to me because my grandfather, who was my namesake, lost his life in World War II, and he was a pilot of a B-24 bomber. He served a tour in the Pacific, and then he came back to the States and was chosen to be an instructor pilot. And that time, they were just churning out pilots and churning out aircraft and sending them to Europe, sending them to the Pacific. And more people lost their lives in training accidents than they did in combat, at least in the B-24. So in August of 1944, my grandfather was doing instructing training over the skies in Nevada, and the tail section of his aircraft came off, and the airplane crashed, and he lost his life along with the other crew members that were on board. He had been married a little bit more than 1 year to my grandmother. My dad was only 3 weeks old. My dad has a twin brother, so my grandmother was left with these two twins, 3 weeks old, and lost her husband. I was named after him. He was a Robert E. Sweet. I'm a Robert E. Sweet. And spring break a year ago, we had a chance to take our girls to Arlington National Cemetery, where he is buried. And we got to see his grave, and that was special for me. And so I say all this to say, oftentimes we forget the meaning of these holidays, and I hope that you do the grill the hamburgers or the hot dogs or whatever you have in mind, or the chicken or those kinds of things, and lean into that, enjoy that, and remember the reason you can enjoy that. It's because people like my grandfather and many others gave their lives, men and women, lost their lives so that we could celebrate and gather in freedom and do these things. And ultimately, it's God himself who has given us these freedoms and these gifts. And so we remember with gratitude, and our gratitude flows ultimately to God. Now, in John chapter 10, I want to dig into these two I am statements of Jesus that we have in this gospel. And let me just say this, John chapter 9, last week Lloyd did a great job of teaching an entire chapter, which is one continuous story, which is why we treated it all together in one Sunday. And the story last week connects to this one. So the story last week is of this man born blind who finds light and sight, but more importantly, salvation in Jesus Christ. But the real story was about all the people around this blind man who thought they were not blind, who thought they could see, but they were spiritually blind. And so the question that we're left with at the end of last week's text is, are you going to be one of those who recognizes your blindness and so comes to Jesus to be healed? Or will you, thinking you have sight, miss your own healing? And so the text just picks right back up. Jesus is still with the same group of people, and he's going to identify himself in a couple of very powerful ways. You know, when he was walking around the earth and teaching and healing and loving people, the question that always followed him is, who is this man? How can someone teach like this? How can someone heal like this and do these miracles that Jesus does? People were thinking, he sure looks just like a regular man, but what kind of man can do these things? What kind of man can teach with this authority? And seven different times in John's gospel, Jesus answers the question, this is who I am. And they all start with the words, I am. And so let me put on the screen the seven I am statements. Oops, I gotta go backwards through all this thing. All right, give me a minute here. This was user error. Is it possible, Michael, to just advance back all the way? Never mind, I got it, here we go. I am the bread of life, the light of the world, and I'll let you kind of read them as we go through. Don't forget that each of these I am statements takes us back to the proper name of God. I am who I am, that he gave to Moses, he identified himself. So each time Jesus was saying, you wanna know who I am? This is who I am. I'm God in the flesh, and here's what that means for you. Seven different times, seven different analogies, but they're actually more than analogies. They're identity statements. When God reveals himself to us and says, this is who I am, we better pay attention. And so that's what each of these I am statements are. Now, today we're gonna cover the third and the fourth. I am the door for the sheep and I'm the good shepherd. What's interesting about these, you can tell these are coming from some kind of analogy or some kind of illustration. In fact, they're born out of a parable that Jesus tells. So we're gonna start with the parable. And so turn in your Bibles, if you haven't already, to John chapter 10, and we'll begin in verse 1. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold but by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters the door, or he enters by the door, is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus begins this whole self-revelation, I am, I am. He begins this with a parable. And that's really what this is. John calls it a figure of speech, which is just another Greek word that could kind of mean the same kind of thing. It's an illustration. He's taking something from real life, something that would be known, and he's juxtaposing that against some identity of who he is. And for us to really understand his statements, we have to understand the parable. And so we have to do some context, because I don't know about you. I didn't know a lot about sheep. I haven't seen a lot of sheep running around Williamson County. Sheep are not part of our everyday life, but they were back in Jesus' time. Everybody knew some things about sheep. And so let me kind of catch you up to where Jesus's original audience would have been. In that day, sheep were everywhere. They were pound for pound the most valuable animal that you could have. You could use their wool, you could use their meat, you could use their skin. Everything in the sheep was valuable, was usable. Typically, multiple flocks of sheep would be held together at night in a sheepfold, particularly if this was a small little village like the one Jesus grew up in Nazareth. You'd have multiple families. They would pay a gatekeeper to guard the sheep at night if they're at home in their sheepfold, and this person would not let anyone in unless it was a shepherd. The shepherd would come in the morning. Now, multiple flocks of sheep, how would he separate the sheep out? They knew the voice of their own shepherd. So the shepherd would come in, he would start calling out to them, and all of his sheep, and only his sheep, would come to him, and he would lead them out. And that's what this parable is about. Now notice there are two primary figures in the parable. There's a shepherd who comes in by the door, and then there's a thief or a robber who would come in another way. A thief and a robber couldn't get in through the door. They'd have to climb over a wall in the middle of the night. The sheep wouldn't recognize the robber's voice, so the robber would have to grab the sheep, seize the sheep against their will. And so you have these two contrasting characters, a shepherd who has good intentions for the sheep, a thief who has evil intentions for the sheep, and only one can come through the gate. So that's the parable. Notice at the end, the last phrase, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. Of course they didn't. Parables are tricky. Parables are hard. You know, Jesus needs to open our eyes. And that's what he would do with his disciples often. He'd say, tell a parable, and then he'd call them over and say, let me unpack this for you. Let me give you its meaning. But this time, he gives the meaning to all of them. And so look how he explains his parable beginning in verse 7. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. Verse 10 is one of the best known verses in John. You might not have known, however, that it comes from this parable. You need to understand the context to really get it. Before we get to verse 10, though, let's go back up to verse 7 and let's talk about this I am statement. I am the door of the sheep. He actually repeats it in a shortened form in verse 9 as well. What in the world does that mean? I'm the door. The thing about sheep is they're very needy. They're very unintelligent. You know, sheep, they just don't have a lot going for them, right? And so what you would do is at night to protect them for their own good, you'd put them in this sheepfold. And then in the morning, the shepherd would lead them out so they could eat because they'd be hungry. And so they'd eat out and they'd go to the pasture so they could eat. Think about this. Twice a day, sheep would pass through a door or a gate. You could translate it gate as well. They would pass through the gate in the morning to get out to the pasture so they could eat and run around and get some exercise. And then they'd pass through the gate or the door again in the evening so they could be secure and rest and be protected. If the sheep were smart enough to understand this, they would know that the door is very important to them. Every time they see that door, they would know something good for them is on the other side. In the morning, it's food and freedom. And in the evening, it's safety and protection. In that sense, the door is like a gateway to life for the sheep. So when Jesus says, I am the door of the sheep, he's saying, I am the access point for everything the sheep need in life, for freedom and fullness in the day, for safety and rest at night. Pass through me, pass through the door. There's nothing truly good, Jesus is saying, that comes without going through the door. Now, there'll be these others, he'll say, that will try to sneak over the door, come in a different way, that will promise you good things. They do not have good intentions for you. The only one who comes in through a different way is a thief and a robber with bad intentions. So the context in verse 10, when Jesus says, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy, I've come that they may have life and have it abundantly. You can understand this in the context of this parable about the sheep. Jesus is saying, my purpose is to be the gateway to life. I'm a door in the sense that you walk through me, you come through me to get to everything you need. Fullness and freedom in the morning, safety and security in the evening. Jesus is saying, I'm not a prison door to trap you in. I'm not a trap door to trick you and punish you. Or my purpose is not to hem anyone in or restrict anyone's life, Jesus is saying. In fact, I've come to be the gateway to everything you need. Everything you need to really flourish. A quick application. How many of us at some point in our life have said something like this? Someday I'll get serious about Jesus, but for now I just really want to live. When we think that, we're misunderstanding Jesus. We have this idea in our minds that to follow Jesus is this restrictive lifestyle. It's gotta obey all these rules and do all these things, don't do all those things. Guys, that's religion. You know, that's every religion on the earth basically says, you wanna know the gateway to life or fullness or nirvana or whatever the goal is of the religion? Here it is, do these things, don't do those things. Follow these rules. Jesus says, I didn't come here to give you a list of rules. I am the door. I am the gateway to life. You come to Jesus. Now, on the other hand, think about the promise, so to speak, the promise of secularism. The promise of secularism is there is no door. Life in fullness means breaking out of any kind of restrictions, any kind of boundaries, secularism would say, that the walls and the sheepfold are illusions. To that, Jesus would say, well, you want life to the full? That's what I want for you too. And I'm the only one who can give it because I'm the one who created you. I'm the one who gave you life. I'm the one who knows exactly what you need. And so Jesus says, I'm the door to fullness and freedom in the morning and the door to safety and rest at night. Come through me, pass through me. Anyone that tells you otherwise does not have good intentions for you. So Jesus says, I'm the door of the sheep. That's the first of these two I am statements that Jesus takes from this parable. And the second, if I can say it this way, it's even better. It's even more wonderful. The second one is because it's more personal. Listen to what he says in verse 11, I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father and I lay down my life for the sheep. Oh my, there's so much here. Let's circle our I am statement. I am the good shepherd. And again, he says it two times. Not only is he the door, but he's also the shepherd. Not only is he the shepherd, he's the good shepherd, the kind of shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. And there's so much packed in to this image. And if you really understand it, it will revolutionize your relationship with God. I believe that. I think the way that you can get there is to start with this thought. Why did Jesus use sheep in his parable? And why does he call himself the shepherd? He could have used any other kind of animal that was common to that day. He could have talked about goats. He could have talked about oxen. He could have talked about camels and horses. And he could have said, you know, I'm the herder of the goats, or I am the rancher of the cattle. You know, he could have used all these other different analogies. I think he used sheep because of the unique relationship between sheep and a shepherd. Remember, sheep are helpless. The shepherd is everything for the sheep. If you were to take a horse out into the wild and leave it, let it go without a caretaker, the horse will become a wild horse. If you were to take a goat out in the wild and leave it without a caretaker, the goat will become a wild goat. If you leave a sheep out in the wild, the sheep will become a dead sheep. Shepherd is their protector and provider and physician and leader and guide and owner. The shepherd is everything for the sheep. That makes the shepherd-sheep relationship incredibly comprehensive and incredibly intimate. And so the God of the universe is self-revealing. So you want to know who I am? I am a shepherd. And this is how I want to relate to you. I want you to see me this way. I invite you, Jesus is saying, to live fully dependent on me, to make me your everything. Fully reliant on me, fully entrusting your life to me. I want our relationship to be like this, a shepherd with his sheep. Incredibly comprehensive, incredibly intimate. And of course, it's even better than just him being a shepherd. It says he's the good shepherd. Well, what does the word good mean? We have to do little exegetical work on that word, because in our English, the word good is not a very strong word. It has come to sort of be a throwaway word. You know, how was your meal last night? Well, it was good. That means it wasn't. It was okay, you know? It wasn't good. Or sometimes you think of good as just sort of like this morally sound person, you know? He's a good man, he's a good woman. Nothing wrong with that, but there's more here. There are multiple ways you could translate this word from the Greek. One of them is beautiful. It's the same word. I am the beautiful shepherd. Now, that doesn't mean that Jesus was handsome necessarily. He's not talking about his outward appearance. What he's describing is his inward character, the nature of who he is at his core and what he has come to do for the sheep. I'm the attractive, the compelling, the beautiful shepherd. I call my sheep by name. They're drawn to me. They're attracted. They're compelled to come to me. Why? Because I lay down my life for them. I am their everything. I care for them. I have only good intentions for them. Imagine a God who interacts with you that way. As a good shepherd. Tom Wright put it this way: the point of Jesus calling himself the good shepherd is to emphasize the strange, compelling power of his love. That strange, compelling power of his love is fully described in this next sentence. Again, he says it twice. At this point in his application of the parable, he's breaking their minds of what a good shepherd is. Let me explain what I mean by this. This phrase, lays down his life for the sheep, if you look at it in the original language, it's talking about trading his life for the sheep. It doesn't mean he risks his life for the sheep or he endangers his life for the sheep. It means the good shepherd trades his life for the sheep. This was unlike any kind of shepherd the Hebrew people in the first century would have ever heard about. Why? Because even the lowliest shepherd's life is worth more than 1,000 sheep. So David, a good shepherd of the Old Testament, can we agree on that? He risked his life. He would go after the bear. He would go after what was the other thing beside the lion that would take the sheep? He would go after, he would kill him. But do you think if David knew that he was gonna have to trade his life for a sheep? You think David would have done that? That would have been foolish. Been foolish. But in God's economy, God says, here's how much you're valuable to me. Here's how much a sheep means to me. I lay down my life. I trade my life for the sheep. Now here's the true parallel. Imagine a wolf coming to the flock and a shepherd somehow becoming a sheep in order to willingly sacrifice himself and be eaten by the wolf to satisfy the wolf's hunger. That's the theological parallel. What kind of shepherd would do that? This kind of shepherd. Jesus is the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. That's how God reveals himself to us. People say, who are you? God in the flesh says, I am the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. That's how comprehensively and intimately the God of the universe desires to relate to you. He's a shepherd to his sheep. He is the compelling, good, beautiful shepherd. Are you drawn to him? Do you hear his voice calling you by name? That's the invitation of the passage. Let me quickly finish our text because I want to apply it. I want to talk more about what it means for us to see Jesus that way. But first, look at verse 16. Verse 16 is wonderful. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them in also, and they will listen to my voice. so there will be one flock and one shepherd. This is such good news for you and for me, because Jesus is talking about the Gentile people groups. He's talking about us. He's putting us in this image. We are the other sheep that are not of this fold. Remember, his audience were the Jewish people of the first century. He was talking to them and he's saying to them, I have other sheep. I am God and you're not my only sheep. That was like scandalous to them. Like they were ready for a fight, right? No, I thought we were the chosen people of God. Jesus says, I have other sheep. I must bring them also. They will listen to my voice as well. And they're gonna be the same level as you. They're gonna be in one flock. Do you not see this and rejoice? You were on God's mind when he was teaching this. You and I were. The Gentile people groups, here we are. Praise God for that, it's wonderful. And then let's look at 17 and 18. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. Do you hear the power in what Jesus is saying? So just as he's presented himself as this shepherd, this caring, compassionate, tender, kind-hearted shepherd, almost the very next verse, he says, I've got such power that it's my decision. No one takes my life from me. Jesus did not go to the cross against his will. He was not overpowered. He was not tricked. He was not caught. He laid down his life willingly. Powerfully. He has authority, he says, to lay down my life. I have authority to take it back up again because the Father has given me this authority. And then look at our last verses. There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Yeah, I bet there was. Many of them said, he has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him? Others said, these are not the words of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? Do you see how the signs of Jesus and the words of Jesus work together in all of this? Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? That was last week. They're saying, Jesus is saying, you saw the sign, now listen to my words. I am the good shepherd. By the way, you will have seen this as a consistent theme in John's gospel. Jesus speaks, Jesus heals, Jesus interacts with people. They don't know what to do with him and they're divided. In the prologue in John chapter 1, John said these words. He said, he came to his own and his own people did not receive him, but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children of God in chapter 1, sheep of the good shepherd, chapter 10. It all comes together. Question is, do you receive him? Do you believe in his name? If so, you're one of his sheep. Now, I want to apply this to us because for much of my life, and then, of course, on some days, even now, I think to myself, I love the idea of Jesus being a good shepherd to me, but I don't experience God like that. I'm guessing that's true for many of us in the room. We're not sure we have a relationship with God that is as comprehensive and intimate as a sheep with a shepherd. Maybe this morning your heart is stirred a little bit to say, I wish I had more of that kind of relationship with God. God, the good shepherd. What would it take to relate to Jesus as your shepherd? That's what I want to talk about with these last few minutes we have by way of application. It seems to me there are two critical things in order to relate to Jesus like this. First, you must see yourself as a sheep. How else would you relate to a shepherd if you don't see yourself as a sheep? The problem is none of us want to be a sheep. This is not an easy thing to think of yourself as a sheep. Sheep are needy. Sheep are the most dependent creatures there are. They can't live on their own. They're not impressive. No one says, look at that sheep. Sheep must be fed. They must be cared for. By the way, if they fall on their back, they will die unless a shepherd comes and flips them back upright. They're that helpless. The buzzards will just start circling them and get them. Everything inside of you and your sinful nature says, I'm not a sheep. Yeah, I fall down every now and then. Yeah, I have some needs every now and then. But fundamentally, what's true of me is I'm strong inside. I'm solid inside. I'm not that needy. Everything in the culture around us screams to us, don't be a sheep. Now, let me ask you a question. If you're unwilling to see yourself as a sheep, how will you come to Jesus as your shepherd? In one of Martin Luther's commentaries, he was talking about sheep, and he says the same thing that all Bible commentaries talk about sheep, which is what I've said to you this morning about sheep. Sheep are dumb, sheep are helpless, sheep are needy, because it's true. And you have to understand that to understand where Jesus is going here. But then Martin Luther turns the tables a little bit, and I love how he does this. Listen to what he wrote. Luther wrote, nevertheless, a sheep has this one trait above all other animals. It soon learns to heed its shepherd's voice and follow no one but its shepherd. It always knows enough to keep close to its shepherd and to look to him for help. And this is the most intelligent instinct of all. How about that? How about sheep being the most intelligent creatures of all because they know enough to stick close to the shepherd? So first, you must see yourself as a sheep. You must be willing to stoop that low and be that humble. Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Second, you must deep down believe Jesus is a good shepherd. In other words, you must deep down in your core, in your heart, believe He has good intentions for you, that he is a shepherd and not a thief. You remember Jesus's parable, two times of people trying to get into the sheepfold. One has good intentions for the sheep. One has evil intentions for the sheep. The sheep follow the shepherd because they know his voice. They run away from the thief. Here's what's true in your life, all of our lives. Here's what's true. Jesus has come into your sheepfold and you have to decide if he has good intentions for you or evil intentions for you, if he is a shepherd or a thief. He's come into the world and he's come into your world. Even if the fact that you're sitting here right now listening to the words of Jesus means at some level Jesus has come into your world. He's made himself known to you. He's revealed himself to you in some way. He's calling out your name. And you have to ask yourself, do I recognize his voice? Do I believe he's my shepherd? Deep down, do I believe God is for me? Or deep down, do I believe God is against me? Do I believe God is trying to lead me to life, or I believe God's trying to take life from me? And if you want to know the answer in your heart of hearts, ask yourself if you've been running toward him or running away from him. Jesus had a story for all the sheep who'd been running away from him. He said, one time, a shepherd had 100 sheep, and one wandered off and ran away and got into some trouble. So the shepherd left the 99 in the safe place and went after the one who had wandered off. Now, something I learned about sheep this week as I was doing all this research is I learned this fascinating fact that when sheep are in the protection and the community of their flock in the sheepfold, when they hear the shepherd's voice, they will follow him. But a sheep that's wandered off from the flock and is on its own and is on danger starts to panic. To the place that when that same shepherd comes and calls out to the lost sheep, you know, you'd think the lost sheep would go bounding through the pasture toward the shepherd. That's not what happens. The sheep is such a disillusioned, discombobulated state in its lostness that it has a panic attack. And it runs all around, running away from its shepherd. And so the shepherd has to come and grab the sheep and flip it upside down and pin it against the ground. And then tie up its front legs and tie up its back legs and then pick it up and put it on its shoulders and take it back to the sheepfold. Imagine how that sheep feels in that moment. What are you doing to me? Why can't I move? Why did you knock me over? Why would you do all this to me? Maybe you're not my shepherd. If you can identify with that this morning, here's what Jesus is saying to you, I believe. He's saying, there will be times in your life that you will believe I'm mistreating you. You will look at me and you will say, if you were a good shepherd, these things would not happen to me. But you're a sheep. And there's much you don't know. Stop running from me, Jesus would say. I'm always for you, even in times and ways where it seems like I'm against you. I'm always for you because I'm a good shepherd.